Hey everyone, welcome to today's roundtable. We are so excited that you joined us for this conversation. We've got an incredible group of panelists today who are going to have a great conversation. We want you to join in. So if you are watching, go ahead and let us know where you're watching from in the chat. If you have your own questions, your own comments, or your own hot takes, we want to hear them as well. But before we get started, let's go ahead and meet the panel.
Leron, go for it.
All right, I'll go first. Hi, everybody. My name is Leron. I'm based in Seattle, Washington. And I could not go and live a day in my life without tacos.
Tacos. All right. Alyssa, go for it.
Which Alyssa? This is the elephant in the room.
That's a good question.
You go first, Alyssa. You're on the panel. I'm just the host. You go ahead.
I can honestly say I've never had the challenge of having another Alyssa in the room. I'm typically stuck with the, I will hear a parent telling a child in a grocery store, Alyssa, put that down, and I freeze because I've never heard another Alyssa around me. So this will be interesting.
To be honest, my husband tells me that too. So I hear that.
Cut out Alyssa Milano's name in magazines.
My mom did tell me that that's who I was named after. She was like, I named you after Alyssa Milano. I'm like, well, I guess that's something we're going to tell people. Sure.
Cool. That's good.
Have a charmed life.
Yeah, exactly. So what food can you not live without?
I would say I can't live without seafood. Love to have, whether it's smoked salmon, sushi, or just grilling up some fish. It's kind of our go-to all the time for something delicious.
Nice.
Brian, let's hear it.
All right. So, hey, Brian, I live in California. So, Leron, similar to you, I'm on the Mexican food train. So burritos for me, we're like, me and burritos get along very, very well. And I would not want to leave them behind.
I feel like I have to close it out, but I'm going to take a broader approach. I cannot live without cheese, you guys. Like, we have to have cheese in my life. Soft cheese, hard cheese, any kind of cheese. That's really my food that I can't live without.
Yes. Do you like it?
Fair.
Do you like it extra funky? Like, where's your cheese levels?
I love all cheese, no matter what level it is, mild or weird or exciting. All cheese is good cheese. So
no discrimination
against cheese.
All right. We had a cheese here the other day that was, you know, it was like beet smelling. And
No, maybe not that. No, that maybe
no, but it was like supposed to be that way. That's what I was asking. You know what I mean? It's a little funky, but people were digging it.
So now that we've gotten our food preferences out of the way, let's get to the real reason people came to have this conversation. I'm going to toss the question right up there. Is it time to kill the customer health score?
Yes.
Okay, tell us more.
Absolutely, yes. Well, I'll start with my take. It is a pacifier for those who have anxiety about their pipeline. Mm. And it is nothing but a check engine light that went on. And you're looking and going, huh. I wonder what caused that. How did we end up here and who can help fix it? Mm. So it's a vanity score. It's a lagging indicator. It's not a leading indicator. And people obsess over it. It is driven a lot of times by a human being. So it is the control of the person who enters that score. And it has a lot to do with how they feel today or how they want to look today or how you're actually compensating them. So if your team is compensated on a health score as a CSM, all my accounts are healthy. Of course they are. It makes me feel good. I look good. I get paid on that. Truth is, who cares? A customer using doesn't mean that they're growing with you. A customer using doesn't mean that they're healthy. A customer using does not mean that your business is healthy. It's a usage indicator. Should you track it? Sure. There's a lot of things we track. Can you act on it? Maybe. But there's nothing really there that tells you that just because someone logged in, they're okay. Listen, I tell customers all the time, just because I showed up at the gym doesn't mean I'm healthy. I walked in, but I'm sitting down eating my four burritos and not doing anything. So does it matter that I have been tons of cheese? So does it matter that I came into the gym? No, but a health score is just, you came in. It's a lot more about what you did, what you're doing. Did we provide you value? Did you grow with us? Did you get what you were supposed to get? Are you seeing value from our product? Are you telling others about the value? Are you bringing others to it? Did it solve the problems that you wanted to solve? Those are the things that actually matter. A health score, something to make you feel good about. If you need that, get a burrito, a taco, seafood, cheese. That will make you feel good too. But it's not how you run an organization that's based on revenue.
So Liran, can you, those questions that you're asking, can you build those into a health score? Where are we providing value? Are you seeing growth in your business? Can those be put into a health scoring mechanism?
Absolutely. And what I've done in the past is I didn't call it a health score, because a health score, when people usually talk about it, it's one-sided. It's very flat. Mm. Is, are people logging in or not? When I look at a customer as a whole, I want to know what the customer score is. And to me, that is different things. The customer score is, are they ICP? Let's start there. Is this the right person we want to talk with? How many of our products do they have out of all the products that we offer? How saturated are we in multi-threading across the account? Those things matter to me more than how many people logged in. The fact that you bought 10 seats and 8 people logged in today does not tell me that you're healthy. The fact that you're using 8 out of our 10 products, the fact that we are across multiple departments within your organization, that we're meeting often with your team, that you say it every time we meet, that we are providing value, that you've given us a case study or a quote, or you post about us in LinkedIn. Those things matter to me more than whether someone logged in or not. And when folks say health score, they usually look at how many people logged in. And the health score is really not health. To use the analogy again of just health, when you go into the doctor and they look and you're like, you look healthy because you're breathing. That's what health score is. But there's so many different factors that have to go into it. And health score maybe has room in a customer success organization, but in my opinion, only if it encompasses every single aspect of that account and everything that matters. Because at the end of the day, a customer success organization is a revenue organization. And the actions that we take, the actions that we do, are supposed to protect and drive more revenue for the company. And looking at someone and just defining them as healthy or not healthy, that's not going to be tied to revenue at all.
Yeah. And I think what we usually see is it usually plays out where the health score and the renewal and or expansion don't correlate very well. I think that's where the problem runs into. Because I agree with you that there's a lot of room for specific characteristics, specific factors that should go into a health score. But even with that, I was talking with one of our vendors in my last job, and she actually showed me, our CSM. She showed me our health scoring mechanism that they use on their side. There's like 25 different functions in there. And all of them, some of them were green, some of them were yellow, some of them were red. And what it came down to, though, is if she asked me one singular question, all of that would have been irrelevant. All right. Of the green would have been irrelevant. And what that one question was is, are you seeing quantifiable value? That's like right. So to me, that's the only question that matters. There's maybe two or three others, but like, if there's going to be one, are you seeing quantifiable value? And if she had asked me that question, I would have said no. And what happened with that particular vendor is, regardless of that health score, our CFO came to us and said, hey, are you using this service? Do you want to keep this? We're trying to shrink our tech stack. If I took this out, would you really miss it? And the answer was no. And so they got a non-renewal, regardless of all of those, you know, check boxes that will fit into that health score. So I agree with you. There's a lot that can be put out there, but if we're going to boil it down to one thing, have your CSMs, your account managers, ask your customers, are you seeing quantifiable value? How are you measuring that value? And then the third question is, are we meeting your expectation? And like that, like to me, if we're going to boil customer success down to anything, to your point, it's about revenue. And therefore, the only thing that matters is like the customer's revenue first, because right. it's going to come into our revenue.
That sounds like a outcome score versus a health score.
Yeah.
So what are the reasons you came to us? What are the problems you want us to solve? And are you able to solve, and how do you quantify it?
Yes.
I think that's part of the, I love what you said. A lot of CSMs just tippy-toe around it without just asking flat out, are you seeing value? If this was taken away from you today, would you still be able to do your job well? Yeah. Would you be upset? Because it doesn't matter, right? Like if you take that away and they don't see the value in it, are you able to articulate the value that our platform brings to you, to your upper management level? Can you clearly state what it is that we bring to the table and how that helps you? And so I think, I love, Alyssa, how you ask, like, is it time to kill it? I think we just need to redefine it. I'm not as a let's kill things, but it needs to be defined. And I think if we moved customer success to an outcome-based motion that can actually be tied to revenue, then it makes things a little bit clearer for the CSMs. It makes it clearer to the customer. My job is to ensure that the outcomes you came to me are one, realistic. Let's start there, right? They have to be realistic. We have to be able to achieve them in the time frame that you want us to achieve them, that you have the right tools and the right resources to do that. So let's set up realistic expectations and then let's track how we're getting there. And then let's give us a score. And I would actually turn the table and ask the customer, not what we think that score is, but hey, based on how those outcomes we've achieved and the time frame we are and the milestone we're hitting, what score would you give us today on that? And where can I help you improve those?
Mm. Yeah, I would agree. I would say it's not about killing the health score, it's deprioritizing it. Much like you were referring to it as like the gym, I always think of it as like taking your temperature. Taking your temperature can indicate some challenges, but it doesn't say for a fact you're healthy and you're going to live. Health scores are meant to simplify what is really incredibly complex. I mean, I've had separate health scores by segment and by where you're at in the journey because number of stakeholders is different based on your size, degree of adoption. I think you really instead, you can put way too much energy against it and not be getting the right answers. Instead, focus on breadth, depth, and value. Breadth across the organization of multi-threading. You have multiple people that are leveraging and seeing value in the product. Also breadth of using your product. Depth that they're adopting it. And have we defined what value is? And are we helping you to achieve it or demonstrating the results of it? If you focus on those three things, it's got the CSM team focused on value and outcomes and driving the growth. Otherwise, oftentimes I'll find the rest of the organization kind of rolls their eyes at health score. Yeah, that's a CS metric. It doesn't really mean something to the rest of us. But if we're talking about value and outcomes, marketing wants involved for case studies, for references. Sales wants involved for the growth aspects, or again, references to other customers and stories.
Yeah, those are great. So then there's a one piece, and Alyssa, we talked about this. Alyssa Melty, we talked about this on our Growth Signals podcast, which is if we're multi-threading, yes, but where I think a lot of CSMs miss is to actually talk with a CFO or somebody in finance. Because regardless of our users being excited or using the tool or seeing value, if that's not laser clear to the CFO, that story that I just told about them coming to me as a director of customer success and saying, do you want to continue with this tool? And me kind of being like, oh yeah, maybe so, maybe not. But they don't use it every day. They're not even involved. And so they're relying on that moment. So let's skip that moment of them asking somebody and be like, I know for sure that the way that I'm looking at this as a CFO for my ROI numbers, it checks that box. And whether people are using it, they'd be upset if it goes away, whatever. It's like, I know that it's checking that box. So multi-threading, yes, but CFO, VP of finance, head of finance, whatever that title is, way more important, you know, in this moment that we're in right now. I think, you know, of the times right now.
I think it's not of the times. I'll challenge you because I started a behavior with my team at a previous company. And this was just when COVID had started. So believe it or not, 5 years ago. And that motion was called at the time, arm the champion. And the CSM had to arm their champion at every point in the call. And the goal was making sure that you, the director of customer success using the platform, anyone else had the tools in their toolbox to champion the platform that they were using and speak about the value that we bring, whether it's to their boss or to the CEO or to the CFO or to whoever is in charge of the budget and revenue. Because one of the things that I think CSMs often miss is they latch onto their champion and they forget that there is an audience around and that audience needs to be sold to all the time. Now, here's the challenge for a CSM. And I've heard it throughout my entire career. Well, they're gatekeeping me. They won't introduce me to those other people. Okay. Well, there's a way around it. If you arm them at every meeting that you have with those outcomes and the results and let them use the words of how they're using it and then say it backwards to them, make sure that they're leaving the meeting with a sense of, you're right. This is what we did. Or this is an area that we still have an opportunity. This is what we're working on. you're arming them to have those conversations, because the piece that a CSM needs to remember is you're not invited and you're not present in where the most important conversations happen. Back in the day was the hallway, the cooler, the lunchroom, where someone would lean over to me and say, hey, so I'm trying to look at the budget. Do you still need this platform? My answer was always instantaneous. And it never was, let me ask my team, but I knew how my team was using it because someone had armed someone else on my team to give me that information. Mm-hmm. Today, that's done remotely. And so you have to constantly make sure that your champion has the tools to share that information. And you also need to share that information beyond. So whether it's you create a one-page summary of the value you've brought to the customers over the last 30 days, where we started, where we are, and where we're heading, and make sure that it is executive level so that it could end up on the desk of a CEO or a CFO. The conversation a CSM is having on a day-to-day with their champion, those are not executive level conversations at all. You have to prep your champion to have those conversations. So in our meetings, we had a section called Arm Your Champion. It was part of the agenda. Well, it wasn't visible to the customer. They knew what questions to ask and how to lead that conversation so that you left the meeting not be like, hey, so guess what, Brian? 9 out of the 10 users logged in.
Yeah.
Someone read the email. We had 2 support tickets. We're still working on it. Yeah. No one wants those conversations. That is the bank statement. No one reads the bank statement that came. That's the previous history. I don't care. Talk to me about where we started. Remind me why I came. Remind me what problems we're solving. Remind me how we're solving it together. Give me strategic advice about what obstacles I have and how I could move forward. Then I have a reason to remain with you. And then that question of, do you see value in what we bring? Oftentimes the value is not just in the platform, but it's in the consultation and the conversation and the guidance that you provide that often is even more valuable than the platform itself.
So let's get really tactical for a second. I would love to hear from each of you. If someone is looking to not kill the health score, right, but to reimagine it, rebrand it, rethink it, what would be the number one thing you would have them do first?
I think, the question is, are you seeing quantifiable value? I think to me, it boils down to that singular question. How it's getting asked and who it's getting asked to is like the sub of that. But with that, as I was listening to you, Liran, it, like there's a piece here that is really important, which is how comfortable are CSMs talking about these things and how easy can they make the conversation for the customer or the user? And even here, what you're saying is like, they're gatekeeping me. That is a moment where, as somebody who coaches CSMs, it's like, great, say that out loud to your user. And in the way, it's like, you bought this product for a reason. You want to see value. What I've seen happen in a lot of relationships I've had is when there is some gatekeeping, when there is some, and even not like, you know, you can just say it out loud in that way, but like I'm stuck with one contact, it crumbles. I don't want this to crumble. You don't want it to crumble. So let's get on the same side of the table here. Let's link arms and figure out how we're going to move this forward. So that type of conversationalist is hard for some CSMs to do. So there is a training piece to this as well.
Yes.
And how we help our CSMs not just look at the data and be like, go talk with that client, that customer, but how do you say certain things and what, and people have a hard time with confrontation sometimes. So that is what I would say, Alyssa, is like, if you want to start with one question, boil it down to, are you seeing quantifiable value?
Yeah.
And then help your CSMs know who to go ask that question to, including somebody in finance, and then how to have the conversation when it feels either good or bad. And don't take the good on its face, like be willing to challenge and push back. So maybe those 3 steps to actually put this into action, those are not easy and they take time and they take solid leadership to give a crap about this. I'll say it that way, because, you know, it really does take a prioritization within the organization to have this type of mentality and this structure.
That's kind of a scary question though, Brian. Like, what if the answer is no?
I love it. I love it. Tell me the truth. You will not hurt my feelings. I am an adult in this world and this is business and it comes down to money. It always, 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 always comes down to money.
But let's, Brian, we shared pictures of our dogs and you know my kids' names. Like, obviously, it doesn't matter.
It comes down to money. So if you're telling me, like, I want you to tell me the truth, tell me the brutal truth, I will be more upset if you don't tell me the truth than say no. And please tell me no. And then we can have a conversation about why. And if it's like you mentioned earlier, Liron, like, if you're not the ICP, that's okay. Like, if you're not seeing value and you're not, you know, you don't want to renew, that's all right. Now I'm just saving my time that I don't have to spend trying to save you as a customer, because the calories that I try to expend on you are a waste.
Well, and there's probably a savable customer out there that you're ignoring,
right?
Because you're wasting time on someone who's not
absolutely
coverable.
Or somebody who wants to expand. You know what I mean? Give me some more money from somebody that fits better.
Liron or Alyssa, let's go.
Brian, I'm curious, though, I would challenge to a degree on, are you seeing value? We need to be training the CSMs before that on how to define and demonstrate value. Because if you're using software, or even lightly in your team is, you may not even know that or recognize the value happening if we're not helping bring you of, you bought this for this reason. Let's help you get there. Hey, sure. Your team is driving these results. To really kind of show you the value you're getting, and then you can define, is that good or not? Is that enough or not? But I worry that if CSM's just going to a call with, are you seeing value, without ever having talked to you about what value looked like or brought to you what your team is doing that could bring value, it may bring the wrong conversation because we didn't arm you on
that's
to get value.
Totally fair point. I wonder in that moment, though, like, would that be a fair question to ask, even with no precursor? is are you seeing quantifiable value with us never telling you what that value is, how it looks like, what other customers are experiencing, best practices, etc.? If somebody says, with no preparation, if somebody answers yes or no in a binary way, it is telling also.
I think it's a combination of both. I think if CSMs, if the first thing you did when you're introduced to an account is, I say, Alyssa, my name is Liron. I'm so excited to be a customer success manager. Here's what I've learned that you came to us for. I want to make sure that these are accurate. Could you tell me in your own words, why did you buy our platform and what you're looking to achieve? Don't tell them what you heard. I told you that I know what you want, but I want you to articulate it for me so that I have your own words. And then write those down. Share that in an email afterwards. This is what you shared is important for you. This is how we'll show value. And then go back to those every 90 days and say, Alyssa, during your Q1, these were your most important things to get from our platform. Is this still the case? Are you still seeing this value? Have things changed for your business? I think one of the things that we fail to do as customer success managers is realize that companies go through cycle. And what's important in one quarter is no longer important in another. There is financial implications that come in. There's a lot of pressures that come onto a company that we need to make sure that what was important when I bought the platform maybe has evolved. And then at any point asking the question of, are you seeing value? I've heard teams, Brian, ask that directly. I've heard a softer version of, if you were to renew today, would you? Mm-hmm. I find that to be a cop-out. Because one, how do you know that that's the person that actually holds the person, makes the decision? And often it's like, tell me you like me. So I'm going to tell you I like you just to get off the call. But I'm not here to be liked. I'm here to make you successful. And I think remembering as a CSM that the person you're working with, in a lot of cases, they purchased the platform. Their name is on the line. They asked for something saying this will give us results. If they're not getting the results, the egg is on their face. Mm. Your job as a CSM is to make them successful. Mm. Not successful using your platform. Not make your platform successful. Make that individual successful. Mm. You partner with them by making them look good in front of others. That is valuable. Then they won't gatekeep you. They gatekeep you. They block you. They ghost you. The answer is it's you. It's not them. They don't see value in talking to you. You're not making them look good. You're making them work harder. They're not enjoying this. So they won't make it a priority. But if you make it about them and share about them how they're being successful and enable them to share with their boss, hey, when I bought platform insert name, my ideal goal, dear boss, was to increase your capacity by 2x, making sure that I save on headcount. And over the last 60 days, I was able to increase capacity by 2.4. Mm-hmm. And that equals this many dollars. Mm-hmm. Now you've made a friend forever. I was able to give that to you instead of telling you in a health score, five people logged in. Tell me where you saved to Brian's point. Tell me where you saved me money. It's all about money. And if we stop hiding from it and just say, this is the conversation we're having, am I costing you or am I saving you? Am I helping you make more? If the company is successful, they grow financially, they're doing better. You as a platform might have a small portion in it, but you can take pride that you were part of the ecosystem that contributed to it. Then you're there. If they're struggling and using your platform doesn't help them get out of that struggle, then be creative in how you show them the value that they've received. But again, if there's no value perceived, there's no renewal, there's no growth, there's no expansion, there's no health.
Yeah. And what one other piece is, you said make a friend for life. That person, you know, that person's going to take you where they go next. You know, when they move to a new company, be like, this product delivers what it wants me to do, what I wanted it to do. And they get me as a human. Like, there's a lot of there is, we say it's all about money, but there is still a human component to this as well. It usually is what you said, like, how does this product make me look to others? Not am I happy, not am I satisfied, but how am I looking to my boss, my peers, LinkedIn, whoever I want to look good to? So if you can nail these things, they will take you wherever they go to next. And so you do have a customer that you can follow around.
Well, and I think it gets a little more complicated than that, because often, Leron, you're the one who made the decision, signed the contract, and you're the stakeholder, but you're not who we're interacting with every week. You'll join quarterly, biannually, hopefully.
Maybe never at all.
Mails while you're sitting there.
That first conversation on why you bought, I agree it's critical, but I think it's also important to kind of connect the dots on why you decided and what Alyssa's goals are, tie them together. We're making sure that you're hitting your goals for your investment, and we're making Alyssa look like a rock star so that she's successful in her career. And otherwise, if anything's broken in that relationship, the first area that the finger is pointed at is the software, because everything else can go.
Yeah.
Well, and how many times have you guys run across where something was purchased that the team actually didn't want? Because I've come across that a lot, where the person I'm working with didn't actually want this thing that they purchased because it wasn't their choice. Someone usually above them actually made the choice. Mm. So, you know, in that case, my health score, my renewal might be good because the decision maker actually likes me, you know, friends with my CEO or whatever. But the actual influencers who have to use this product and talk about this product and have an experience with this product really don't care for my product, my experience, my services. So, like, what do you do in that case with a health score? Mm. Basically,
that's
garbage.
That's part of the problem with the health score. Right. It's defined by that one person you talk to, but there's so many different people and so many different personas that are actually part of the product and the relationship that you're maintaining, whether it's the stakeholder that never shows up, that you still need to keep informed and up to date and appraised and align with on what is needed. It is the end users that are using the platform every day and might see different value than the champion or the stakeholder. And so it cannot be one size fits all. And I think it's the same across the board. That's why that health score to me is meaningless, because it has to take different aspects into consideration. You might have a detractor on the team, and you might have a group of people on the team who love the platform itself. You need to decide where you're spending your time and where time is really valuable. But again, to Brian's point, it's about making sure that we show value. If you have a platform that was purchased by an up above person and then given to the team and the team doesn't want it, your responsibility as a CSM is to bridge that gap, to explain to them why that was bought and what value they will see. So that happens often in large organizations. Someone buys a platform and now you have to use it and you don't see the value, or you don't want to change. As a CSM, no one wants to hear, hey, you logged in, you clicked four times, you did this. I don't see how that's helping me. The conversation is different. Yeah. And I think the biggest challenge for customer success teams today is understanding that they have to have at least four different conversations with four different personas and groups inside of each organization on a regular basis. And so you have to do a lot of code switching and hack switching from executive conversation to buyer conversation, stakeholder conversation, to champion conversation, to end user conversation, to influencers who might be impacted, but are not direct users. And we just have our weekly, monthly check-ins, which give me hives every time I hear it, because no one needs to check in. Heck, this isn't a hotel. There's no check-in or check-out.
Oh, my
God. That's not what we do. That is not what we do. We drive towards success, and it's proactive motion that has to happen. You have to drive it. When you let the customer sit in a driver's seat and you as a CSM are sitting maybe in the co-pilot, but mostly in the back seat, you have zero control about where they go. Yeah. You have to drive them towards the promised land, which is the outcome that they wanted to achieve.
We've got some feedback in the comments from this part of our conversation.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to read those to you and get your guys' reaction. So this came in when we were talking about maybe you have a champion who or a decision maker who loves you, a contact who doesn't necessarily care for your service. The comment is, then that needs to go into the health score. I would keep an overall score. And then a score for each product or service. The overall score should keep in mind retention. Are they looking elsewhere or going to bid for RFP? Thoughts?
I see how that works. But what if I have 15 different products and I work with Enterprise Fortune 100? What does that look like? And who analyzes that data and keeps track of it? I think to me, when I coach CS leaders, I always tell them, whatever it is that you're going to measure, has to be something that you and the team are actually going to take action of. This is not a collector's hoarder's version of let's collect everything we can. There's so many data points in CS, and yes, you can track all of them, but it just goes into a report or a dashboard that no one does anything.
Mm-hmm.
What's the point of having a data point that no one can do anything about, and it's not actionable, and it's not a leading indicator into something that you're going to do? I can collect a bunch of information. Unless I'm doing something about it, it doesn't matter. And I think if your product is simple and your offering is simple and your buying group is small, there's value in doing so into getting an understanding of where you're at. But the more complex organization, the more complex product, the more complex platforms and organizations, it becomes literally impossible. And then what you have is a team of data scientists, not a team of CSMs who are constantly looking at data, trying to figure out which playbook I'm supposed to implement here, because this means what? Wait, it was yellow at 62%, but two people are in here and three are not. And that's all that they end up doing. And they're not spending time with customers actually helping them.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question about, I love the concept of data hoarding, because I think we do see that. But in reality, like in enterprise, I consulted with a large enterprise and they had an entire section of their Salesforce instance where they had to put in all this information, but you couldn't actually have that information at that point in the sales cycle. So people were just putting in like fake information to bypass it. And I asked them, I'm like, why do you even have this? And they're like, well, so-and-so VP of some and such team said, I need this dashboard. And in order to have this dashboard, I have to be able to have this data. I mean, it was garbage data because they were trying to bypass something. But we do see this in companies where people get asked to create health scores to collect data that has no intention of being actioned and really is just meant for an audience of one.
Yeah.
So how do we get around that?
What comes to mind is what I'm encouraged by is I've seen a lot of recent new generations of AI tools, agentic tools specifically that plug into the CS motion. And many of them are narrow and deep, specifically around how do I get my CSM to prioritize XYZ today? And I think this is a really exciting progression for where we, if we look at a book of business, Leron, you were talking about like monthly check-ins. That was the thinking. I have to talk to my customer at least once a month. We get on, to your point, Alyssa, we talk about their dog or their house or whatever. It's like, great, we checked that box today. Now I can check that box in Salesforce or some CSP, and great. However, three customers were ignored that are blinking red because nobody is really focused on their value. So my point in saying all that is I am encouraged by the direction that I'm seeing a lot of our software headed to support CS, which is do this today and forget about the other 50 customers in your book of business. And I find that very refreshing. And I think our customers will find that refreshing as well. I'm not reaching out to set up a monthly check-in. You seem good. And so I'm focused on these today. So I don't know if that exactly answers your question, Alyssa, but it is the direction that I feel that we're headed in, like the prioritization of actions. Couple that with what I was talking about earlier, coaching the CSMs to be humans and really focused on money and have a transparent conversation, and we're in a much better place. And so I'm excited by that progression that we're seeing right now on prioritization.
We're getting some comments about AI and health scores, and I think we're at a really interesting time. But I think AI is a great solution, but I worry that it's going to have the same problem that health scores have now. It's a bunch of stuff that we've thrown into a database alert, LLM, and because it only can have the data that we have, it's only as good as the data we feed it. But what is your reaction to how these tools are changing the way we're going to be doing work?
Alyssa, you had some?
I was going to say, I think the challenge is some of it's going to come down to how we're looking at it and thinking about it. Much like with health score, we're looking for a one size fits all. And the reality is there are so many different, in any business, so many different personas, so many different segments. And if AI tries to make it all fit one happy circle, it's not going to work. I think it can. I love data, but data is also overwhelming. But if we start to recognize, here are the key data points that matter. You know, in one world, it's going to be about adoption. In other, it's how many different metrics of value can we be bringing to you? You're always going to need the human element to understand what matters to that business. Right. And then tie it with understanding and training the CSM. Here's what value looks like here, so you can help bring the customer there. Here's the key things to ensure happen in year one, so that the customer does recognize value. So helping to kind of put on blinders to a degree on what data points matter. And I think AI can help tie some of that together, help to prioritize with the evolution of the industry, evolution of technology. These data points are most important today versus what we looked at 2 years ago. No longer weekly average users. It's now about number of integrations or number of page views.
So I think for me with AI, what you were just describing is a wonderful use case. AI does a great job of correlating data that I think we have a hard time doing with, say, spreadsheets or other tools. Like I think about the tools that we had that visualize our data, Looker, Amplitude, those type of tool, Pendo, those type of tools are helpful, but there's no real crunching of information. I think that's where AI can really help us is does correlate to a renewal? What does correlate to an expansion? And not only do that on a blanket, book of business, like this type of customer in this region, these type of segmentations. So I think segmentation and number crunching with AI is going to be really valuable to get us to a next level of holy hell, we didn't even think that this was correlated. And it is. Do this thing right now. That's the way that I'm picturing the next few years playing out.
Yeah, I've been building in AI for the past 11 years. I can tell you that the greatest thing that it gives CS is time saving. All that data crunching that we're trying to do, all that analysis about what phase, what stage, what makes the customer look like they're healthy, where they're at. Data is all correlated and helps you direct and lead your customer success team into better places. And a previous company, the way I use that data is looking at all the customer usage data, all their sentiment. I used information from calls to actually run an analysis using AI that showed me that when we did monthly calls with customers, the results were the same when we did calls every 8 weeks. That was the best piece of data I've ever gotten, because that told CSM, you just got an hour a week back in your time, because there's zero impact.
That's
to that monthly call versus every 8 weeks call. And so utilizing data, not to look at health score, but the data that we get from how customers are using our platform should enable us as CS leaders to better inform our teams about where to go and what to do. What does a healthy customer look like based on their segment, based on their age, based on where they are in the customer life cycle? And I think remembering that a health score is an internal metric that we care about as a company. The customer does not care about it. And their definition of what healthy and successful is often isn't reflected in our health or success metrics scores that we have. And therefore, there's a complete disconnect. We define someone as healthy. And to Brian's point, he tells the CSM, I'm not. This is not how I think about it. So if you were to do a health score, it has to be defined by how the customers will define that they are successful. And that goes back to what I said, ask them to define what success looks like. What are three things that you see, feel, or do differently now that we've implemented this platform successfully? How does your life change? How does your team change? What does that look and feel like so they can quantify it? Maybe that's easier than a hard number of 2x save on in enter whatever metrics, but what do they feel, see, and do differently now that they have implemented your platform? That is their health score because they've met that qualification. And remember that it's not one size fits all. And even inside of your ICP, there are so many different variations and versions of what your customers are like and where they're at, who your champion is, how long they've been at the company, what does the company do, what industry they're in, where are they going? All this has a lot to do with it. And so AI comes in and helps you analyze all that data and serve it up in a way that's more visual and more appealing and easier to understand. But without being the true leader that you're supposed to be and looking at that data and then what? Then what's the point of collecting data? I mean, again, you can collect your bank statements. I'm sure they tell you lots of interesting information, but does it tell you, are you ready for retirement? Does it tell you where you made the wrong decision, where you could have made something different? No, it's just numbers on paper. Yeah. And so take those data points and those numbers, but turn it into actual outcomes and activities that the customer success team can and should be doing with each and every single customer. And it varies.
Mm-hmm.
We have a comment coming in from Mitchell that I'm going to put on the screen. I like what you're saying from a CSM management perspective, but health scores are data points that are easy to communicate. How would you recommend communicating customer success data and customer specific information to other leaders in the company in the absence of health scores?
Ooh, great question. Fantastic question. I can tell you what I do as an executive and how I communicate these metrics, not only to other executives, the company when we do all hands meeting, but also to the board. I think, again, there's room for this data point of whether you think a customer is healthy or not. Again, you're going to have to clarify how you define it and what health means to you and to the team. But it is one measure of a bunch of information that is needed. I define a customer healthy because they actually renew and grew with us. As an executive of a revenue organization, to me, the bottom line is, did this customer renew? Did they buy more? Did they reference us somewhere else? Did they speak for us in an event? Did they tell others that we are a great partner to them? That means more than a health score. And so a combination of what I would call revenue metrics like GRR and NRR, payments on time. There is value at looking at daily active users, because if someone bought something from you and they're not utilizing it, there is an indicator for your product team. And I'm going to drop this mic here and say, that is an indicator for the product team, not for the customer success team, to go pick up that mantle. Because if someone bought something and they're not using it, it's not for the customer success to solve, but for the product to solve. But I think we obsess too much on the health that is so subjective, and we forget that we are in a forest because we're focusing on one tree. I will tell you this, Michael, as someone who led an HR tech company during the pandemic, some of my healthiest customers on paper could not renew because they went bankrupt. And so it mattered nothing that they were green. They actually could not afford to stay in business with us, and we lost them. The ones who were unhealthy on paper were actually the ones that grew with us the most. So I think there's value in it. It is one indicator. Again, it's a lagging indicator, not a leading indicator. And so I think it is time to just look at things differently and challenge the rest of the executives, companies, and boards to say, just because we've done this always doesn't mean we should continue doing it this way. There's a better, newer way to do it.
Yeah.
Alyssa or Brian, any other thoughts for Mitchell?
I have one, if that's okay, Alyssa, which is my kind of spicy reaction to this one is, I don't think other leaders necessarily care about health scores. They care about their team's outcomes that they're trying to achieve, and most likely their bonuses. Like, it comes back to money. Right? It's like, am I looking good to my boss? Am I getting a bonus? What is required to get to those levels? And I agree, Liron, that it is usually the lagging data points of GRR, NRR, depending on what each team is incentivized by. And so let's replace that thinking of, well, we need to know if customers are good or bad in order to know if they're going to renew or expand, I would say let's focus more on the actions that we know are going to impact those. So if I'm, so for example, for you, Mitchell, if say you're on the support team, like it, are the CSMs understanding what customers' pain points are? Like that, that to me is a better indicator that we're doing our job and that you will have an impact based on what we are trying to do with those customers. Health scores, like you don't know anything about the customer interaction that the CSMs are having. So I, as the director of, say, of customer success, would much rather give you information that you can use to understand how your our customers more. So health scores be damned, if you will, in this scenario. It's like the number means nothing to you. I want to know as a good fellow leader, what you're measured on, what you care about, what's going to get you a bonus, what's going to get you a promotion. Like, let me focus there as opposed to health scores. And it usually does, again, come down to GRR, NRR, what is the lagging data? But what do we know is going to impact those lagging data points? That's what I want to be talking with you about. Health scores don't really matter.
Completely agree. I mean, I can say in past lives, I've had other executives kind of act as though, you know, the health score is monopoly money of, yeah, sure, that's great and all. Until you can demonstrate that 95% of green accounts are renewing, which takes a long time to get your health score that accurate. And by the way, the triggers are going to change. It doesn't really have value. I agree. You're looking at GRR, NRR, leading indicators. You are the expert in the room demonstrating what it takes for a customer to renew. I think time to live, especially I've been in worlds where it can be a 3-month implementation. So if we demonstrate time to live and are we improving it, time to first value. Customer sentiment can be a little tricky because often you're getting the sentiment from maybe their support team, their engineering team, maybe the users, but not necessarily the decision makers. So if you're able to kind of tie together the sentiment of decision maker and user, that's great. But I think if you can identify some of your leading indicators and demonstrate the impacts we're seeing against that, those are then bringing that value of our GRR is here and the leading indicators that are going to drive that GRR are continuing to improve. So we're kind of showing the direction GRR is heading.
Yeah. Yeah. And that will lead to the communication that those leaders want to have with each other. It's like, what do we need to tweak? What do we need to change? How do we communicate to our teams? What are we celebrating? What do we need to work on? Which I think is the point of Mitchell's question, is like, how do leaders communicate together about what's actually valuable to work on?
So I have a question I want to ask all of you as we kind of start to wind down our time here on our roundtable today. Alyssa, we're going to start with you. If you could leave our listeners with one thing on the health score, what is it?
It's a great question. I mean, I would say I would not advocate to kill health score, but think of it as a smoke detector. It's letting you know some risk, but don't leverage it as your life raft for your customer. Index on relationship and value. Focus on the customer, not the data.
Leron and Brian, who wants to go next?
Oh, I can build on this.
Perfect.
Alyssa, that was so good. I want you all to think about the fact that if the customer health score cannot accurately predict revenue for you, it's not a health score, it's just a distraction. As customer success managers, we're not here to monitor data. We're here to move revenue. So I beg of you, kill the noise. Stop doing things just because we used to. Stop distracting and focus on really what matters, track what matters, and take actions on those.
Yeah, those are great answers. And maybe I'll build one additional piece, which is if we're saying that health scores kind of matter, kind of don't matter, what I would say is listen to more phone calls that your CSMs are having with their customers. Let's go a little bit more on the coaching side, a little bit more on the qualitative side. Are you talking about outcomes? Are you talking about value? Are you talking about renewals and dollars? Are you shying away from those? Because if your team is not able to have those conversation, health scores do not matter at all. And so, yes, use them as a smoke signal, as Alyssa said. Use them as a tool, and they can be refined. But even better, like, let's really make sure our CSMs know how to have the conversations about value and that they're having them.
Awesome. Okay. So as you guys know, as people who've followed my page or connected with me, follow the podcast, I love to talk about the future of customer relationships, how we build them, how we keep them, and how we lead as customer expectations rapidly evolve. So I want you to basically, we're going to put other people on the hot seat because that's just fun for me to hear who else we should be listening to. Who is leading the charge when it comes to changing the way we understand how health scoring works?
I'll hop in. It's not going to answer your question exactly how you want, Alyssa.
So that's okay. I forgive you.
General. I mentioned it earlier. I've had so many great conversations with companies that are using AI tooling to go narrow and deep as opposed to broad, which we've mostly experienced with CSPs and CRMs on how to manage CS. I love the direction that, for example, a tool like Lumopath is one that I've worked a bunch on, and they help CS teams to prioritize actions based on understanding what actually matters to customers. Correlating data, to your point earlier, Leron, like, does this action result in a renewal? Yes, great, do more of that. So Lumopath is one, but I've had so many great conversations with people who are leading this charge of getting away from broad and going narrow with their AI tool. So kudos to them. I love the direction you're headed. Keep going, because it's going to really save a lot of time and attention for CSMs.
I'll take in a different direction from there. I am a big believer, and I've been building customer success teams and sales organizations for the past, I'll date myself, 17 years. So I've been around. I know what it used to be like. I know what it is like today, and hopefully I can be part of the future of what it builds. Join the train of Bob London, who challenges other CS leaders of doing things differently, not doing the typical things just because we've done it. Challenge the organizations, challenge your customers, challenge your CS organization to do things differently and think about it from the customer's perspective and not do things just because you have to do it.
I love that. Just because we have doesn't mean we should, right?
Yes.
That's really smart.
That's great.
Alyssa, who are you thinking of?
So many different. I feel like everybody has some different thing they're doing. I've had some really good experiences, even with Gong, frankly. They've done a lot of not just continually tying it to value and what you're trying to do, but also doing kind of going outside the CSM comfort zone of, have you ever thought about, here's some other things you can do that you didn't say were a priority, but from what I know on your business, I think this could help you. That's scary as a CSM because then it's the don't you know me. But I mean, there have been multiple times where I'm like, my ears are perking up of like, wow, you know me better than some of my own colleagues do. This is really interesting. And, you know, being unafraid to kind of go into some new territories or areas with a customer, I think expands your relationship.
That's great.
I love it.
So as we wrap up today's roundtable, any final thoughts you would like to leave our listeners with?
It's okay to focus on revenue and money and the transactional nature of business. Be transparent in that and say things out loud like, I want to be on the same side of the table. This only works when we're together. And here's when it can crumble. Here's what I've seen. Here's how we can move forward together. Like those type of directions, don't be afraid of that. Keep going.
Yeah. Have those conversations that are hard for you. They're not hard. They're uncomfortable. CSMs are part of a revenue organization. They're revenue drivers. They're not a cost center. Get comfortable in having those conversations. If you're not as comfortable as Brian is in saying those words, find a softer way that works for you. But know that at the end of the day, whether you're comped on renewals and expansions or whether you are driving those and someone else gets paid for at the end, you have influence on those actions. Therefore, your actions have to drive them. You have to ask tough questions of, when you spend X amount of dollars with us, do you see the value from it? And where can I help you find it?
Agreed. I was going to say we've evolved where CS needs to focus on outcomes over adoption. A few years ago, it was adopt, right. Almost training. Mm-hmm. Now it's really focusing on outcomes. But I think what you just said, Leron, is so critical. Find your voice. Mm. You don't need to talk like Brian. You don't need to talk like Leron or me. Find your voice. Time and again, customers have shown they appreciate if we have those uncomfortable conversations and it's repeatedly led to growth or just deeper, more valuable relationships. It's critical to find the voice that's comfortable for you to have those uncomfortable conversations. Once you can do that, I feel like things become very smooth sailing.
Mm, well said.
What a perfect place to leave it. So thank you so much for joining me on this roundtable, to our panelists and to our,
thanks for having us,
our guests and our commenters. Thank you to our commenters for engaging. It's always more exciting when people are actually participating. Please, I encourage you to connect with all of our panelists. Make sure that you're connected with them, following their content. They are incredible thought leaders. They were invited to this roundtable for a reason. And thank you so much for watching. Have a great rest of your day. And we look forward to hearing how you have decided to kill, rethink, evolve, reanimate the health score. Follow up with us and let us know what you guys are working on, because we would love to hear it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everybody.